Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I've done interviews with over 1,000 entrepreneurs about how they build their businesses. And a while back, I did an interview with an entrepreneur who you're going to meet today. It was about 2 years ago now. And I talked to him about how he started an insurance fraud investigative company, which he sold for $20 million. And throughout the interview, I saw in my notes that he had this new social media app. And I knew he wanted to talk about it, and I frankly didn't. Even at the end of the interview, I gave him a little bit of time, but I brushed it aside and wanted to get back to the main focus of the interview, which is how he built this company and sold it. Well, I know my reason for it. I want Mixergy to be about what people have done, how they did it, etc., not what they're going to do. And this was kind of a going to achieve type of story. But I've stayed in touch with him because I really like the guy. He's one of those people that is just easy to stay in touch with, easy to get to know, easy to talk to, because he has this sense of comfort and confidence that makes me feel more comfortable and confident about being around him. Anyway, throughout the last couple of years, he's pinged me from time to time to just check in, to say, hey, Andrew, here's how this business is done. Here's how many new customers we've gotten. Here's how big we're growing. And I finally said, hey, you know what? I got to get you on here. And I started asking him to come and do an interview here on Mixergy about this business. His name is Tim Fargo. He is the founder of Social Jukebox. It's an automated social network management tool. I invited him back here to talk about how he did it. And this interview is sponsored by two companies you probably already know by now. The first will host your website. We use it. It's called HostGator. The second is the company that will help you hire your next great developer or designer. It's called TopTal. Tim, welcome back.
Andrew, it's great to be here. It's been almost 2 years to the day.
Yeah, I'm looking at the interview. We published the interview July 31st, and we're about 2 years from that. Let me ask you this. Why don't we get to the numbers? You've been pinging me over the years. I don't want to say any numbers unless you feel comfortable sharing it. Do you feel comfortable saying what your monthly recurring revenue is or your annual recurring revenue is?
Yeah, I mean, I can spitball it. I don't
It's not an audited financial statement, so I'm okay with it being rough.
No, there's not going to be anyone handing me an envelope. We're doing just over $300,000, you know, a year.
Per year.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's coming off a total I just literally pulled this up. This number is actually fresh unless someone signed up in the last 5 minutes. We have a total of 21,823 users, and that includes – free and paid, and then of that we've got as of this morning 1,943 paid users. So I mean, and that bounces up and down. I mean, I just got, you know, an email from someone, because I get people that are free that convert to paid, and I unfortunately, you know, people also go in the other direction for a variety of reasons.
So. Yep. How many employees of the company?
You're looking at them.
That's it. This whole thing is you.
It's me. That's it.
No, you're not a developer as far as I know. Who's coding up this site?
I'm using Group Auto Russia. So.
Okay. All right. And so fair to say bottom line is 2/3 of revenue roughly there?
A bit more than that.
A bit more than that. Wow. And so this is considerably less than the business that you're doing before. How does it feel to – I know I measure myself against my past all the time. How does it feel when you're measuring yourself against this past business that was a $20 million business?
It's awesome.
Why?
Because,
I see a big
because
smile.
Because I had 300 employees, over 300 employees. I mean, okay. It's nice to have that revenue, but I mean, you know, that's a little village, you know, to be running around like you're the kind of chieftain or something. And so there's kind of a psychic cost to that, whereas this – I mean, I do have a relationship to this development team that I use, and I mean, I have a dedicated engineer. I used to have more than one. I had a team of three, and I've scaled back, and we can get into that later if you'd like. But I actually think there are a number of things that make this business far superior to the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that I was in Ukraine all last week with my son, totally running the business. Everything was just business as usual, and I mean, it didn't make a stick of difference that I was, you know,
not working
in Eastern
or
Europe.
On a minute by minute basis and spending time with your son. This is like the ultimate lifestyle business.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, for me anyhow, I mean, I'm sure they're, you know, everyone's got their own kind of like boxes they need to check and things like that. But for me, this is hitting on most of the cylinders.
You know, I like to go back and do research, and you told our producer that after the last business, you let yourself get heavy. I found a photo of you heavy. You look so lean and like in control of life right now. Maybe it's the way this photo looks. You just, I don't know, you look like a retiree who's got nothing going on and maybe was never had anything going on. It's amazing how a few pounds make a difference in the sense of the person's personality, right? I'm just looking at one photo and I could, like, all these things are going through my head, which I'm kind of ashamed that I feel that way and that I've said it out loud. But it is a huge difference. What was going on in your life after the sale that got you to what I'm looking at in this photo here?
Wow, I'll try not to dive too deep into this, but okay, so I sell, I've got a lot of money, or at least enough for me, and one thing that happened
was... give me a rough estimate.
I sold for $20 million, and then, you know, I mean, like, okay, I had to pay taxes, I had a partner that owned 22% of the business, we busted through some of the covenants on the agreement. You know, like there was some reps and warranties we made, and we busted through a couple things. So I had to give them back like $300,000 or $400,000. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
It was very clear to me when I was writing the check.
Fair to say over $8 million?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, over $8 million. Okay. At the end, that was what was in your account. Okay.
Yeah. So you do that, and then every day's Friday. And you move to Sweden, and then you get divorced in a very, at least from my perspective, divorce unfriendly country. And you know, so I relearned division very quickly.
What do you mean? What happened? What's the divorce like in, you said Switzerland, right?
Sweden,
excuse me.
You split it down the middle.
Okay.
There's no, I mean, you can fight things, but it's really ridiculous to even try to do that. And there were some reasons for me not to do it anyhow, just because, you know, my kids are involved and, you know.
Right.
I mean, yes. Do you really want to turn your kind of domestic life into a battlefield? I mean, as much animosity as you might feel towards the other person, I mean, there's collateral damage that can occur when you do stuff like that. So anyhow, so the number got smaller, and fortunately there's been some investments that have allowed that number to grow a little bit. But I think more than anything, you know, in the process of that, I started drinking a fair bit. Yeah. But I was really fit. I mean, in terms of like, I was running half marathons and stuff like that, and I was super fit. And when I stopped drinking, I started eating. You know, it just took me a while to kind of like sit down and like I kept promising myself that I was going to turn the corner on it. And I'd actually started trying in the last time we talked. I'd lost a small amount of weight. And since the last time I talked to you, I've lost 80 pounds. And that's all been – I would have never believed it when I was a younger guy. It's all been nutrition. I mean, I've certainly been working out. But the thing – the change that made a difference was – I mean, you know, changed input led to changed output.
I have to tell you, I hate that nutrition makes such such a big difference, because I like doing more of something, not being careful and watching, right? When it comes to nutrition, you have to care about the individual ingredients in each food, how many calories you're taking in, and so on. I'd much rather that I could just run it all off, you know, because there you don't have to think so much. Just run more miles. But –
it works. I can tell you that for the younger members of the audience who probably like hate hearing this from an old dude like me, but I mean, when I was younger, that totally worked.
Run it off?
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of, you know, who cares what you put in the furnace? If the fire is hot enough, it'll just like melt everything.
Okay.
But you know, I'm not 40 anymore. I'm 56 now. So, you know, the fire doesn't burn quite as hot, and, you know, for whatever reason, that really made a difference. And I mean, I can remember being a guy that when I was young, I was super lean, but I mean, I'd do stuff like I'd go to Denny's and order a pie, not a piece of pie. I'd order a pie.
Their salad is like 1,000 calories, I think. So I can't imagine what the pie has. All right, so I get it. You put on 100 pounds. You're probably also thinking, as you told our producer, hey, what am I doing here with my life? I feel like I'm – here's what you said to the producer. I feel like I'm just running out the clock, meaning just waiting to die essentially. And that just wasn't the right way to live. And so you picked yourself up. You wrote a book about how you built your business, Alphabet Success, right? You then said, you know what, if I have a book at this point in the world's evolution, I need to have a Twitter account, start promoting it. And you started to do what on Twitter that led to Social Jukebox?
Well, I was posting – I mean, I started with inspirational quotes and whatnot, right? Because I thought, okay, this is – I mean, it's a fairly broad kind of shotgun approach. I mean, there's, I'm sure, arguments to be made for a more nuanced approach. But I thought this will get me a lot of eyeballs. And I was doing that. I was posting, and I was, but I was continually having to schedule things, right? And the problem with that is there's no value add to the audience. I mean, people don't care if you climbed Mount Everest to, like, you know, with your last breath, send out the tweet. I mean, it looks the same to them.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of that, I was actually in South Africa with my wife, and we were getting ready to kind of go to the outback, the Karoo. And I was trying to figure out where we would be and when I would have access that I could upload posts so I could keep my feed going. And I finally got so frustrated, I called the guy that used to be the head of IT for Omega, the company I sold, and just said, look, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is really a database and a posting engine. You know, it's not like super complicated.
Yep.
So can you build me something? And in the beginning, it was just for me. Because I was just tired.
But why haven't built it? There were tools at that point that existed. I used software that allowed me to schedule my tweets. Why couldn't you just use one of those?
Okay. And this will get into something great, later on about creep of scope with regard to a piece of software. But I found that using some of the products that did that, that like allowed you to kind of continually post, which is what Social Jukebox does. I mean, you have, it'll go on forever, right? I mean, as long as the Amazon server bill is paid, it'll keep posting, and as long as your token's valid. But the problem was, you know, you get these products where they do so many things, and then trying to get it to do the one thing you want, it does a zillion things, but none of them particularly well, at least in my opinion. So I wanted to focus on having something that was super easy for me to use, and I didn't have to spend a lot of time like monkeying around with it.
I see it. And you knew a guy who could create that, and you said, you know what, let's just go to him. How long did it take you, did it take him to create that first version for you so that you could tweet on a scheduled basis and not have to be interrupting your day for tweets?
I would say probably about 2.5-3 months.
Okay.
We had a pretty tight, the interface was like pretty horrific, but
you called it something out of the early 90s is what it looked like.
Yeah, that's actually probably a little bit flattering, overly flattering.
Okay.
But yeah,
it was meant for you.
Yeah, I mean, so it didn't really matter, right? Yep. I mean, I wasn't trying to do anything more than I knew where the things were that I needed to use, and so we.
And you wanted to do more than tweet, if I understand this right. It wasn't just it's Monday morning. I want to tweet. Schedule my tweets for the rest of the day and maybe the rest of the week. It was also, hey, what about next Monday? If I don't post anything, I also want to go into this archive of tweets because they're evergreen and retweet those, some of those at least. Is that part of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, okay, so when I got onto Twitter and I was doing these inspirational quotes, I mean, I went and I pretty quickly assembled a couple thousand quotes that I thought were pretty good. And mm-hmm. I viewed this as actually my differentiator because I looked at other people that had similar accounts and I thought some of their stuff was pretty anemic. So I tried to have a fairly strong quality filter on what I was posting in terms of that the quotes had – they weren't – I tried to stay away from things that were too like fluffy and puppy doggy. Mm-hmm. And so it – but it didn't matter. Like I – For a while when I was scheduling stuff, I sort of imagined myself as like social media disc jockey or something. Like I'm going to, you know, oh, at this hour, this will be the perfect thing. And I found so often was completely wrong. Something I thought would be get minor traction did great, and something I thought would be a home run barely got touched. So, because you really, you don't know who's going to be on, you don't know who's going to be paying attention. So it's, and that is actually one of the things that also led to me thinking that the tool would be great, is that because it doesn't, you aren't picking a particular post to go out at a particular time, but I don't think that matters. I mean, as long as you're identifying that it's a certain genre of post and it's going out within a certain window, I think it's fine.
Okay. All right. That's so that's the functionality.
Yeah.
You had it 2013, you built it for yourself. 2014, you decide, I'm going to make this available to other people. Right?
Yeah.
Was it that made you say, oh, you know what? I guess maybe 2015. I saw you hesitating. I'm looking at my notes. Maybe it's 2015 that you finally did push it live to people. But I'm wondering, what was it? What was it about what was it that made you decide, I'm going to send this out to other people?
I can tell you people were a lot more interested in my software than they were my book.
Wow, interesting.
Well, you know, the thing is, okay, when you fulfill a bona fide need, uh-huh, right? I mean, like, if you – and I think this is even true of books. If you came out with a book tomorrow that would explain to people how to dominate Instagram or Snapchat, those are two really popular channels right now. So that's something that's super topical. If you have a book that becomes the must-read on that topic, people are going to go to it because they're looking for that, like, right now today. It's time-sensitive. And so what – The tool actually is a bit the same thing. It fulfills a direct function, whereas my book was more like general principles and things like that. And I think a lot of people, especially in the case of my book, it fell into the category of a lot of things that people think they already know, and they probably do know them, they just don't do them. I mean, most people know the basic elements of execution, but how many businesses do you go into that are just like run like crap? And it's not that the owner probably doesn't understand intellectually like what they're supposed to be doing, but they just don't implement it. So in any event
– I see. You're saying, look, I'm tweeting out about my book. Everyone's asking me about the tool. I'm getting asked so much about it that I finally said, let's launch it as a business.
Well, it seemed – you know, go where it's easy. You know, you don't get any points in life for like trying to do the hardest thing on your plate, you know. And people were much more interested in the software than the book, so it was kind of a no-brainer.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor and then come back, and I want to ask you about why I saw a website for you in 2014 before it was public, and I'm looking at a screenshot of it from April 2014. But the sponsor kind of ties into that. It's a company called HostGator, and I had a new business that I wanted to launch recently. I got really excited about chatbots, and I wanted to create a place where anyone can learn how to create a chatbot and also hire a one of our graduates to have them build a chatbot for them. God, do you know chatbots, Tim? I'm so into them.
I don't, actually. I think conceptually I know what you're talking about, but
for anyone who doesn't know, essentially, chatbot is software that talks to people using chat apps like Slack or Facebook Messenger. And I think it's just such a growing area that I've made some angel investments in the space. And then I said, you know what? I want to teach people how to create chatbots. We created a business to do that. And then, as I said, I wanted to let anyone who doesn't want to learn it and just hire, they just want to hire a graduate. We set them up with the graduate so they could hire one of our graduates to build a chatbot for them. Anyway, the first thing I needed was a website where people can go and find out what we're about. And so I said, where do we go? Well, I've been talking about HostGator for years, and I said, let's go sign up with them. And one of the best parts about working with HostGator is they have a cheap plan that I think will cost, what, $320 a month? Something really inexpensive like that. I'll go look it up right now. But I said, you know what? I want your best. The best of the best, meaning I want dedicated server. I want actually, frankly, for me with them, it's just dedicated server. That's all we really needed. And so I signed up for them, and I think we started out with $3.48 a month is their cheapest plan. But I quickly said to them, hey, upgrade me to the best. They upgraded me to the best that they had. We ended up doing webinars, and I'd have 1,000 people register for a webinar within 2 days. I'd have hundreds of people coming into the site, not just within the same hour, but something like 1,600-1,700 people joined my webinar within the same 10-minute period, and the website withstood all of that traffic and still not just allowed people to come into the webinar, but also allowed people who are students of the program to go in, people who wanted to hire graduates to go access the site, people who are just looky-looing on the site to go look at it. And it's all because HostGator is that freaking dependable. So I've talked about them forever. I've used them. I'm highly recommending anyone who needs a web hosting company to go use the company that we use. It has all the things that you need, even at the cheap plan. $3.48 a month is where they start. You're going to get, at that point, unmetered disk space, unmetered bandwidth, unlimited email addresses, free website builder templates. And I think when you're starting, just use one of the templates. 365-day tech support. That means every day, every minute of the year, they have somebody available to take your tech support issues via phone, live chat, email, however you prefer. And if you're not happy with them, within 45 days, they'll give you your money back. We've been really happy with them. We went beyond that little plan that I just mentioned for $3.48 a month. And if you're out there and you want to get started, that $3.48 is a good place to start. If you're more advanced like us and you expect to have thousands of people come to your site every day, well, then they will talk to you about upgrading to a much more robust plan. But they're very flexible, very dependable. I'm happy to be using them, and I'm happy to recommend them. If you want to get that low price that I just mentioned, which is 50% off what other people pay, go to this URL. Go to hostgator.com/mixerg. hostgator.com/mixerg. All right. Speaking of websites, Tim, it does look like you kind of put up a website as soon as you started it just to see what people were going to do. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, well, we had kind of a soft launch because, I mean, I had friends from Twitter that I turned on to it and just said, hey, you know, kick this thing around, see what you think, before we sort of invited the public at large, so to speak.
Okay. And this is such a wordy website. I've got to tell you, your website now looks so good.
At least by comparison.
I think it looks really good. It's super clear at the top. I know exactly where I'm supposed to click. The early version of your site just had paragraph after paragraph explaining what the website did, why it was there, what a thank you tweet is, etc. And I get that that's important to communicate, but this new site just describes it all much simpler. Okay, so you decided I'm going to launch this. Was part of it your goal to build a business, start getting some revenue? What was the goal there?
I think I wanted to just see what would happen. I'd never done anything like this. This is all, I mean, every day is kind of a new thing, right? And I think that's at least for me, you know, that's a really great thing. I mean, as I talked to, you know, in the pre-interview, I mean, you know, it's awesome to have this equity event and sell, right? But, you know, do you really want to play deep? Like, if you scored a bunch of points in the first quarter, apologize to anyone who hates sports analogies, but, you know, you score all these points in the first quarter, so, like, what, you're going to play defense for the next three quarters of the game or the last half? I mean, even if you have a great first half, it just feels weird. And so, going back to your question, I think that I wanted something stimulating, and I wouldn't even dream of going back into the investigative business, even though I know it pretty well. So this was more interesting as kind of a both an opportunity to make some money and a little bit of an intellectual challenge to see if I could figure it out.
Okay. And then your first users, where did they come from?
Just people I knew from Twitter, social media, and people that were asking me, like, what do you use and how does it work?
And you know, send them a link, say, hey, try this out. It's free. And it was free at first?
Yeah, we were free for a good long while, and then I generated a lot of anger when we got close to having a payment gateway and we took away some of the free privileges. Got some interesting email.
That is a tough thing to do. Usually what people would do is grandfather in their current customers and just give them access to the stuff that was free or add new features and charge for those. But why didn't you decide to do it that way?
Because I wanted to make money. Okay. You'd never convince someone who felt differently, I suppose. But to me, you know, in the end, this kind of tool is never going to be something that's like a huge thing like Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest or Snapchat or LinkedIn or whatever. You know, it's a tool. So you're going to have a certain size of audience. And I think you need to just make a decision. I mean, do you want to just have like cute metrics to talk about at a cocktail party? Or do you actually want to have a bona fide business? And it actually answers a better question anyhow, because lots of people will sign up for free stuff. But do you have something that people actually pay for? Because if they'll pay for it, you probably actually have something.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then how many users did you have before you decided that you were going to start charging, roughly?
Oh, geez. If we had eight, we probably were around 15,000, I'd say.
15,000 free users.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how you got them. Was this thank you thing part of the way that you got people?
Sure.
How
Because
did
we
you do it?
didn't.
How did the thank you tweets work? And then how were you able to grow your audience, grow your user base?
I mean, it was all through that and just word of mouth and things like that. But the whole point of like the thank you tweet, I mean, for one, I mean, I guess it's, you're thanking people. But the other reason that I advocate for it is, social media is pretty heavily channel surfed, especially something like Twitter. And people might see something in your feed or it got retweeted by someone they follow and then they click on it, but they won't remember you, right? And so conceptually, the idea, because I was doing thank you tweets by hand
The thank
for
you
the.
tweet is, I mention you and you send me a thank you tweet. That's what you used to do by hand, right?
Right.
It was
And
just a
that would
note that
be.
says, "Hey, thanks for tweeting out about me."
Right. It's a more general message because typically I'd put like 4 to 6 usernames, like thanks for interacting, whatever. And then I would send those out over the course of like a Friday or whatever, like on Follow Friday.
Got it. Okay.
But it gave people a chance to be reminded of you and come back. And I found that to be pretty highly effective. I mean, I have 500, 5,000 followers on Twitter, so I'm presumably doing something right.
Yeah.
And I have a ton of impressions as well. So there's that. And then I think when people saw that, it got the word out quite quickly. I mean, we generated a ton of enemies over it because people are like, "This is horrible." And so
Wait,
we.
how did that help you grow your subscribers? I don't see how that's bringing more people into the software.
You just have to get noticed. I mean, that's the hardest thing I'd say in the market today
I
is
see. So it's just anyone who talked about you got another reminder that you guys existed and another opportunity for them to sign up to use your software.
Right, and if they and as the user base grew and more people were sending thank you tweets, more people saw them and more people saw them and
Okay, so
ubiquity.
then you automated it, so your software now enabled any user of your software to send out these thank you tweets. Was it linking back to your software?
Sure.
It was. How? I don't remember that.
Yeah, well, it's just at the tail end of the thank you tweet, and then if people clicked on it, it would take them to a page and it would say thanks and give them an opportunity to also sign up for the
I
tool.
see. So it was kind of like a via, which it was called at the time, tweet jukebox. So via tweet jukebox type of thing. They'd click the
Correct.
URL, they'd see a bigger thank you on the landing page, am I right? And then also have an opportunity to sign up for tweet jukebox.
Correct.
I see. Okay, I see. I didn't realize that's how it worked. All right, so that helped you get subscribers. I could understand that. Every one of your users who's thanking their people is also mentioning your software, and you have another opportunity to bring new people in to use your software. What else did you do that helped you grow your user base?
I think just being positioned as by having a decent size account, I mean, that's a sort of social proof, that the tool works. And then some of the people that were sending the thank yous also helps. I was writing, and I haven't actually done as much kind of social media posting as, like, say, for instance, I mean, Buffer is kind of an entity unto themselves when it comes to posting about social media and things like that. And part of that is because I find writing those posts to be a little bit boring. But I have written some of those, and that's helped grow the tool. I actually try to, I'm trying to do more of bringing out like verticals for my customer base, like explaining like how will Social Jukebox benefit a podcaster? How will Social Jukebox benefit a
And you're
blogger?
writing posts about this.
I'm writing posts and or doing a video. And
Okay.
then sharing it with the audience.
I see. And I've never gotten one of those videos. Do you have a video about how Social Jukebox helps podcasters, and then you send it out to people like me and say, Andrew, you should understand how we can help you?
That actually maybe perhaps a bad example because I haven't done it yet. I had a
But
conversation
that's the
with
kind of tactic that you would use. You'd create a video for one group of people and send it out to each one of them individually.
Well, I think a vertical, post probably makes more sense than just a general post, because there's such a huge
I get it, but then are you individually sending it out to people?
I'm sorry?
Are you individually sending it out to people?
No, it would be sent out kind of en masse to the customer base and then just like trying to get
it. Okay, everyone on your mailing list would get it and they'd all understand. Okay. Is that right?
Correct.
Got it. Okay. All right. What else? Give me one other thing that you did to help grow your audience base, your user base, excuse me, in the beginning that allowed you to get to a level of people that you can start charging.
That's it, man.
That was it.
That's
it. Thank you was a big one.
I didn't spend a dime on advertising.
Doing videos. I get it. Okay. All right. And then you started to charge. How'd you know what you were supposed – how'd you know what to put into the free version versus the paid version?
I tried to look at what people use the most.
And that's what you would put into the paid?
Correct.
Interesting.
I mean, if you're not going to take a pain point and make that the place you're going to charge, I mean, you know, you're not maybe going to be that successful.
What was used the most?
Well, people want posting. I mean, it was interesting because in the beginning, I thought people would want more storage. I don't know why I thought that, but people want – a lot of my customers want to post more times per day. So by constricting the number of times they can post in a day, that makes it appealing to a certain group of people.
I see. So then the high power users are going to be more likely to need to pay, and they're the ones who are using the tool most, and so that's where you put it. Okay.
Right. So, and I mean, as far as knowing what to charge, I don't know. I mean, I kind of took a page out of Derek Sivers' book. I just looked at what everyone else was charging. And you know, we were a narrow tool when we launched. We were just on Twitter. So, you know, we came out, I mean, I don't, there's so many things in retrospect. I'm like, what was I thinking? $12.99 is like the weirdest price point. But I just kind of pulled it out of the air. It was like, what do you think? I don't know. $12.99 sounds good.
You know what though? So there's Buffer, Post Planner, Meet Edgar, Social Beat, Hootsuite. In a world with so many competitors, why did you think that you could do well? Why wouldn't anyone just go to any one of those other software options?
You know, I have this this thing when we were going to launch, and I really think it's important for anyone who's thinking about starting a business in a space where there's already people. You know, you look at a car, like, I'm not a very big fan of Peugeot, okay? Mm-hmm. But they sell cars. They're never going to sell a car to me, but they sell cars, and I don't really know why people buy them, but there's a lot of products like that that I just can't even conceive. Like who their audience is, like who buys this product. And so I, you know, sometimes I think when people are going to launch something, they think if you're not this giant shining diamond at the top of a mountain, that you have no chance. But that's not true. I mean, you only need to be appealing to a certain audience. And if you can find that audience, you'll be okay. And I mean, because I didn't put much more into the tool than the cost of development, and then creating a couple things that would help me try to generate awareness. I mean, I didn't lay a huge amount of money, so to speak, on the table. So it was kind of a, you know, why wouldn't I try and see what happens?
So you're saying when the market's big enough, there's room for a lot of competitors and there's an audience for each one. I'm wondering then, who's your typical customer, or who are you going to target that might not have been addressed by others?
Okay, well, let's take Meet Edgar, because I think Laura's done a great job with that business. Mm-hmm. And I think that – but her customers are probably a little more judicious in their posting in terms of – I mean, I probably have an audience that's much more like hammer it out. You know, they're putting out – like I do. I mean, I post 600 times per day on Twitter, which is, for by most people's standards, an insane amount of posts.
600 times per day.
600 times per day. Wow.
And I'm looking. I have your Twitter account up as we talk, and it's tweeting as we're talking.
Yeah, man. It's going.
Yeah, okay. So then she has a more judicious group of people. They're basically bloggers who are posting their own stuff on schedule, right?
Right. And so, you know, my tool is more based off, like, frequency. Like, one of the things we created because I had people that were getting frustrated because they'd inadvertently schedule things over top of each other. Because we used a frequency-based system, so I came up with this auto-scheduling system where you just say how many posts you want for each reservoir or jukebox, as we call them, per day, and then you just press schedule, and it generates a schedule that accommodates within whatever time. Like if it starts at 8 and goes to 5 and you want a certain number of posts in that time period, it'll create all the slots for you.
So who's the person who would want that? How would you describe that person?
Aggressive.
Aggressive. I see. So I get it. So where she's going after a more judicious audience, you're going in the exact opposite direction towards someone who's more aggressive, someone who wouldn't mind having dozens, if not in your case, hundreds of posts going up. I get it. Okay. I see it. I see now. So then you start charging. People complain. What was the feedback like? Do you have an example?
I mean, people were calling me a greedy asshole and things like that. You know, I survived.
Okay.
but I, you know, and I mean, I think on one hand, it's sort of, I mean, to me, that's a little ironic because isn't it a bit greedy to just expect me to kind of provide you for a free yes. tool, sort of ad infinitum? Yeah, well, hey, I don't care about my kids. Let me just keep paying this server bill so you'll be happy. So anyhow, right. I mean, there was some feedback like that. There were people who – and actually, this is one of my favorites, and I encourage people that have a tool that get feedback from people that, like, complain about price points and things. I would get people say, well, $12.99 is just too much a month. You know, and here's all the reasons why. And I'm thinking, okay, if your business acumen is so extraordinary, why is it that you can't pull together $12.99 right. a month to pay me? You know, sorry to be – maybe that doesn't sound like make me like the nicest guy, but I just – wow. Yeah. So you're like an expert in business, but you don't happen to have $13 a month. So, you know, you get feedback like that, but I think if – if everyone loves you, you're probably not going to be successful. You know, I mean, there's always going to be a point where you're going to ask for something and you're going to disturb a certain number of people.
Okay.
So, but I mean, hey, look, you know, we made some people mad, but we got about, I think it was 523 or 525 initial paying customers, something like that.
Yeah, I have the number here as 588. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Okay.
588 paying customers paying you $12. Did you say $12.99 a month?
Well, it was a variety. I mean, some people had the basic advanced account. Some people bought a pro plan, which was $24.99, and some people bought a business plan, which was $49.99.
Okay. So we're talking about roughly maybe $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less than that. Okay, that's not bad. That's a great start. All right, so now you're off to the races. You've got a business. You've got real customers, and things are starting to grow. Let's come back in a moment. Actually, before I talk about when Len left, Len is the guy who created the software for you. What was he like, or what is he like as a developer?
He's an awesome developer. I mean, I can't say enough about
– what made him so good?
Look, Tweet Jukebox, no one's touched that code since he left.
Okay.
And it's firing away – unstoppably. There's no bugs. There's no complaints. I mean, nothing. I mean, and you know, I think you're talking about a piece of software that's, you know, doing thousands and thousands of posts, you know, every few hours, and it's just they're, you know, it's bulletproof.
And you haven't coded it. You haven't touched it since he left. No, you did, because hired this new team of people in Russia, right?
Right. But what we did is we took the existing tool and we modified it, and then we moved over to a new domain.
Got it.
Right?
Okay, so you're saying the previous site is still up using his software right now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Okay. I see. And so that does show me how strong his work is, that it's still working. And how long has it been since he was there?
Over a year.
Wow. All right. Let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor and then come back and ask you what happened that led him to leave, and then how you handled it when he did leave. All right, the sponsor is actually a good fit for this conversation, Tim, because it's a company called TopTal. There are not a lot of people who are fortunate enough to know someone like Len Sixt, who created the first version of your software. But those kinds of developers are phenomenal. They don't just code exactly what you tell them. They know how to figure out a solution to a problem that you present to them, create code that they're proud of. They love the challenge of creating a product that they could be proud of. And those kind of developers are why so many startups move to San Francisco, to find those developers, to be around those developers, to hire them. Well, the team over at TopTal realized that there are a lot of businesses that don't want to move over here or can't move over here. And there are a lot of developers who are the best of the best who also don't want to live here. And I understand why. I have friends who go all the way down to Mountain View from San Francisco. That's an hour and a half by bus each way. It's not a life for a smart person. And so TopTal said, our focus is going to be on finding these incredible developers, allow them to live wherever they are. We're going to have a screening process that will basically beat people up because it's going to be so tough. But people who are great developers are going to love the challenge. And the top 3%, 3 out of 100 who make it through this process, those are the only ones we're going to put in our database. And when a company needs to hire the best of the best developers, they could come to us at TopTal and hire them. And so that's what they have right now. Andreessen Horowitz loved the idea and the execution so much. It's a blue chip venture capital firm. So much they loved it that they invested in the business. Anyone out there who wants the best of the best developers, and they will change your business, they will change your product, they will have a huge impact on what you're creating. If you want to hire the best of the best, I want you to go check out this special TopTal URL. And by the way, it's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent. Here's if you go to this URL, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. That URL is toptal.com/mixerg, toptal.com/mixergy. I'm grateful to them for being such longtime supporters of Mixer G. Why did Len leave? Great developer, changed so much. Why did he leave?
He retired.
That's
something,
it.
Something your audience is probably not going to be doing. Well, not for the same reasons. Len retired because he's 65. And I think, you know, Len had, I mean, his sister passed away, his younger sister.
I see.
And, you know, I think he just thought, you know, do I really want to be plunking around with this? I mean, I've worked on a lot of projects. I've done a lot of interesting stuff. And, you know, I'm going to move on. And I put a pretty good run in it trying to keep him around, but
I don't know. It's kind of scary when someone who is such an important part of your business suddenly leaves. How did you feel about it? How were you able to deal with it?
That was really hard. I mean, and it continues to be difficult to – you know, look, there's a lot of competent people technologically, right? I mean, there's a lot of people who can code, and then there's people who can code around a business idea, and then – Len's the kind of person, he just like took so much incredible amount of pride in what he did and was so keen on making sure that when he solved a problem, he wasn't creating a new one, which is something that very often happens in development. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, we fixed this. It's like, yeah, there's 20 other things that are now broken. So, you know, he was super good at that. And I mean, it was a really difficult transition, but he was super at stepping in and looking at what, you know, we let a couple different groups poke away at a couple problems we were trying to solve. And then we looked at how they tried to solve the problem and their approach and how they dealt with us. Because everybody's going to tell you they're going to do an awesome job.
I see. And so you said, if we're going to find a replacement for Len, what we need to do is not just interview people, but have them work on our actual problems, have Len look at their solutions to see not just how they solved it, but how they think about it and what else they touched as they were solving it. And the ones who did the best work, that's who you ended up hiring to take things over, right? Okay.
All right. I would encourage anybody who's thinking about doing something like this to take the same approach. Whatever perceived cost you're going to incur as part of doing that will be a drop in the bucket compared to what will happen if you get it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've got a friend who I think you know him. He is really struggling because he hired a team of people who do good work. But man, were they causing all kinds of other problems as they were coding, as you said. Broke other things. He's now just trying to figure out how to fix it. And it's months and months of work. Lost a lot of momentum because of it. So painful. All right. So you got your audience. You're starting to charge. You get to about $10,000 a month. What did you do to double that? Because you've been sending me texts and email messages. Actually, email messages is how you and I have been communicating to show progress. What have you been doing to grow?
Well, when we were going to Social Jukebox, I started beating the drum. And one of the things I did was say, look, And I'm honoring this. Like, if you came in at the intro pricing, because we've raised our prices. Mm-hmm. Now it's $12.99 is now $19.99. $24.99 is now $29.99. And the business plan stayed the same. But I started beating the drum pretty hard on, look, if you want in at this original pricing, you've got until this day to do it. And so we got a lot of people came in for that. And that, though, I have to say, I mean, I had a nice run of like boosting people up, and you know, and now we're treading up and down. And I'm grappling with having to, you know, now like actually probably do some heavier lifting when it comes to marketing if I want it to grow.
What about the affiliate program? How's that doing?
You know, I thought that was going to be a really big deal, and I have to say that what I think I've done is I've just signed up a bunch of new free people.
Because you gave affiliates free accounts in order to get them to promote?
No, because what's happened is people have come and taken a look at the software, and if they're people who are, quote-unquote, of that judicious audience – they may, that we talked about earlier, they may say, hey, 5 posts a day, which is what you get with a free account, is plenty. So they're going in, they're scheduling their 5 posts, they've got their, you know, their reservoirs of content set up, and then they go and do something else. And I'm glad to have those people because, I mean, you know, you get valuable feedback from all your customers. But in terms of converting, I mean, we've tried a few different ways. We've tried like playing around with some like contests and comp structures and things like that. And I don't think that doesn't appear to be the root problem. And I know we have some really avid fans. So I don't think the problem is the enthusiasm or the comp. I think, you know, so we're either faced with, do we get rid of free completely and just go to free trial and say, if you want to be on the product, then, you know, it's either pay or go away. Because maybe what I'm encountering is that the number of people who are, quote unquote, aggressive just isn't as that big. I mean, I have a nice business, don't get me wrong. But, you know, maybe if you want more people, you're going to have to just face the fact that you're going to have to say, look, if, you know, you can try it. And it would be better in a way, too, because there's a lot of constraints on the free version. And it would almost be better to say, you got 30 days, you know, here's the full Monty, do whatever you want. And you either, at the end of that, you either provide a credit card or it just goes away.
I've seen a lot of businesses go that way, too. What you'd lose there is that branded tweet, the branded thank you from the free people. Is that helpful?
It is, and I mean, and therein, that's the rub, right? You know, it's like, do you want to keep growing free in the hopes of someday monetizing it, or do you want to just like pull the switch? Look, if I got rid of free tomorrow, I know I'd increase my revenue.
Yeah,
that's unquestionably
true. But
would you
keep growing your business? That's the big question.
Yeah, exactly.
What was I going to ask? The name change. We didn't get to that. It was Tweet Jukebox before, right?
Right.
Why did you change it?
Well, because I think, you know, we're not Twitter-centric anymore. Now we post to Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And I, you know, I didn't want to have a name that was that Twitter-centric. And actually, I don't know if, like, there's a lot of tools out there that use Tweet and Twitter in their name. And that's actually, that's against their terms of service, which I found out.
Don't they use the word Tweet in their name?
You cannot use, if it is in, like, within the scope of possibility that Twitter would actually send their legal team to shut you down. Whether they'll do it or not, who knows? But
so you do LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. My guess is that Twitter is by far the heaviest use, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have a fair number of people using Facebook. And LinkedIn, I mean, of course, you know, you have advocates for all these tools. Because of where we started, yeah, I mean, we have a pretty Twitter-centric audience.
All right, let's talk about the spam issue that you had. What was that?
When we were getting started, there's a company who shall remain nameless, which is more than I could say for the way they treated me. But I think they were reporting us and getting everyone they knew to report us as like a spam, you know, bot problem, whatever. So we had some users that were having rejected posts, and this was like very early days, but it was extremely disconcerting because it was right when we started charging.
Mm-hmm.
So people were like, it was fine until you started making me pay for it. And fortunately, I managed to reach out through some people I know and, you know, explain, like, look, you know, tell me what we need to do. And
so wait, what were they doing? They were taking your customers and marking their tweets as spam?
They must have been. Because
I see. And how do you know it's them?
Look, I don't, but I don't know. When if there's a group of people who are like constantly posting threats and making like pretty nasty comments to you online.
From their company they were making nasty threats to you?
Yeah, I found it really bizarre. I was
like,
geez.
Let's not connect them directly to the spam, but which company was sending threats to you on Twitter or saying nasty things to you?
Do you really want me to name?
Yes, I want to know just the company. We're not going to say that they are the ones who did the spam thing. We're not going to say they're the ringleaders. But which?
It was SMQ. They're based in Australia.
SMQ. I don't know them.
They would tweet
at you and say you're just not creating great software. It's leading to spam. That kind of thing.
It's spam. You know, you're a wannabe. It was really. I got to be honest, man. I mean, for me, like, just given the nature of social, it's like, what are you guys doing? I mean, this is just so. I mean, I was in the investigative business, okay? And that's a kind of a cheesy, sleazy business in many ways. And I thought I'd kind of seen it all there. And then, like, I'm encountering this, and I was like, what are you guys doing?
What's the company? I never heard of them.
It was amusing. There was a guy who was trying to ask them a question because I started, like, looking at their feed a little bit to see what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy was asking some questions about the software, and I guess they were pretty fired up about me, and they accused the guy of being affiliated with me, and I had no idea who the guy was.
Wait, so, is this – it's called SMQ?
Yeah.
Never heard of them. What's their website?
I think it's smq.com, I think.
I can't come up with it. All right. Okay, and so you then knew someone at Twitter. It's not smq.com. I can't it's okay. So then you went to Twitter and – got them to understand that you're not creating a tool for spam, and that's what helped you get out of the doghouse with them?
Well, first, my first question was, you know, are we being targeted? And the answer was no. So what it turned out to be is that some of the customers were being individually targeted. And so we went through a lot of conversations and iterations, and I think that finally these folks moved on to something else, you know, this competitor.
Mm-hmm.
But the dust settled and it's no longer an issue. So, and we also put in some safeguards, like, because we had at one point we had groups of people that seemed to be like when we were free that were signing up for accounts and just like turning them on like at the maximum speed and things like that. So we had to kind of self-regulate a bit. I mean, it's one thing to be aggressive; it's another thing to just be like insane. So.
I see.
So we had to just step in and do that. But yeah, we managed to find a way to calm things down enough that we moved forward.
How big a feature is that jukebox feature? The one that lets me select tweets from a library of other people's tweets.
You know, I think it's the most underappreciated piece of the software. Honest to God, it blows me away that people aren't using it more. Part of that is my own fault, but I've tried to get people to understand, like, if you were doing a book launch, all you have to do is put something in the library, then get your friends in your launch team to sign up for a free account, load the jukebox, and turn it on.
So they will all be tweeting the same thing with me and helping me.
Yeah. You know, you'd have all this stuff going out. You could be promoting a particular hashtag, whatever. It's like super, super easy way. Because what's the greatest challenge of getting people to help you? If it's hard, they won't do it.
Yeah. Like even if I ask someone to tweet out an interview, I need to make it easy for them to tweet it by writing the tweet for them. I see. But you also allow me to, say, grab tweets from Zig Ziglar. So if I want his quote, somebody loaded him up as a jukebox and I could take it and you'll randomly send those out, right?
Correct.
Okay. And you're saying it's still underappreciated. It's the heart of the business. That's part of why you started. But people just aren't using it. The big thing that they're using is what?
Well, I mean, it's a mix. And I mean, there are people using it. But I think it's interesting to me that such an easy way of creating distribution for content isn't more popular. Because it's definitely a differentiator. I mean, I don't know anyone else that has that. And I think it's an easy way to do it. Now, we do have people that are taking quotes from other people, whether it's stuff we put up or other, you know, customers that have, you know, put things into the library. But a lot of people are just, they're, you know, they're putting their own content in, or, you know, what I advocate for a lot of them is doing a little bit of a mix. So that they, you know, they have,
so I don't have to write all of my tweets. I can just go into your library of tweets, select a handful, and you guys help enrich my Twitter stream with your stuff that's worked
correct
for others.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we close out with this? Before we started, you said, hey, you know what? I don't need to dominate the globe. What do you want?
I think, you know, this might sound like a really goofy answer, but I'm actually just interested in having fun.
And what's fun for you now? Now that you've got a lifestyle business, kicking off revenue, helping you meet new people, growing your profile online, what's the fun thing that you're doing with all this revenue, with all this freedom?
I mean, I'm spending time with my kids. I mean, you know, I was just in Sweden for 2 weeks because I have triplets, and they all just graduated high school. So I was able to spend 2 weeks knocking around up there, and then, you know, did this trip to Ukraine. My kids are turning 18 in August, so I'll be back in Sweden, you know, renting a summer house in the archipelago of Stockholm for a week, and, you know, we'll have their birthday party, and I can kind of go anywhere and do anything I want to do. I mean, I have to take care of my customers, but it's not this, like, super daunting thing. And I think, I mean, when you asked about the comparison between the old business and this business, you know, this business will sit on its own for a couple hours while I go do something. But if I have an investigator that got thrown in jail, I can't really go, you know what, I'm a little busy right now.
Yeah.
Doing something. So
that is, yeah, a great benefit.
Yeah, it's huge.
All right. The website URL is socialjukebox.com. Really simple. And there is a free account if you guys want to try it. And the two sponsors that I've had on today are the company that I use to hire developers to help us out at Mixergy. It's called TopTal. And the hosting company that is hosting my new business is called HostGator. If you want those discounts from them, just add a slash Mixergy at the end. So HostGator.com/Mixergy or TopTal.com/Mixergy. Tim, thanks. Good to have you back on here.
Andrew, an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Bet. Bye. Bye, everyone.